14. Kid Samson. By the time of the mission to Bologna, Yossarian was brave enough not to go around over the target even once. And when he found himself aloft finally in the nose of Kid Samson's plane, he pressed in the button of his throat mic and asked,
"Well, what's wrong with the plane?"
Kid Samson let out a shriek.
"Is something wrong with the plane? What's the matter?"
Kid Samson's cry turned Yossarian to ice.
"Is something the matter?" he yelled in horror. "Are we bailing out?" "I don't know," Kid Samson shot back in anguish, wailing excitedly. "Someone said we're bailing out. Who is this, anyway? Who is this?"
"This is Yossarian in the nose. Yossarian in the nose. I heard you say there was something the matter. Didn't you say there was something the matter?
I thought you said there was something wrong. Everything seems okay. Everything is all right."
Yossarian's heart sank. Something was terribly wrong, if everything was all right and they had no excuse for turning back. He hesitated gravely.
"I can't hear you," he said. "I said everything is all right."
The sun was blinding white on the porcelain blue water below and on the flashing edges of the other airplanes. Yossarian took hold of the colored wires leading to the jackbox of the intercom system and tore them loose.
"I still can't hear you," he said.
He heard nothing. Slowly, he collected his map case and his three flak suits and crawled back to the main compartment. Nately, sitting stiffly in the co-pilot seat, spied him through the corner of his eye as he stepped up on the flight deck behind Kid Samson. He smiled at Yossarian wanly, looking frail and exceptionally young and bashful in the bulky dungeon of his earphones, hat, throat mic, flak suit, and parachute. Yossarian bent close to Kid Samson's ear.
"I still can't hear you!"
he shouted above the even drone of the engines. Kid Samson glanced back at him with surprise. Kid Samson had an angular, comical face with arched eyebrows and a scrawny, blonde mustache.
"What?"
he called out over his shoulder.
"I still can't hear you!"
Yossarian repeated.
"You'll have to talk louder," Kid Samson said. "I still can't hear you!" "I said, I still can't hear you!"
Yossarian yelled.
"I can't help it!"
Kid Samson yelled back at him.
"I'm shouting as loud as I can!" "I couldn't hear you over my intercom!"
Yossarian bellowed in mounting helplessness.
"You'll have to turn back!"
"For an intercom?"
asked Kid Samson incredulously.
"Turn back," said Yossarian, "before I break your head."
Kid Samson looked for moral support toward Nately, who stared away from him pointedly. Yossarian outranked them both. Kid Samson resisted doubtfully for another moment and then capitulated eagerly with a triumphant whoop.
"That's just fine with me,"
he announced gladly, and blew out a shrill series of whistles up into his mustache.
"Yes, sirree, that's just fine with old Kid Samson,"
he whistled again and shouted over the intercom.
"Now hear this, my little chickadees. This is Admiral Kid Samson talking. This is Admiral Kid Samson squawking, the pride of the Queen's Marines. Yes, sirree, we're turning back, boys. By cracky, we're turning back."
Nately ripped off his hat and earphones in one jubilant sweep and began rocking back and forth happily like a handsome child in a high chair. Sergeant Knight came plummeting down from the top gun turret and began pounding them all on the back with delirious enthusiasm. Kid Samson turned the plane away from the formation in a wide, graceful arc and headed toward the airfield. When Yossarian plugged his headset into one of the auxiliary jackboxes, the two gunners in the rear section of the plane were both singing La Cucaracha. Back at the field, the party fizzled out abruptly. An uneasy silence replaced it, and Yossarian was sober and self-conscious as he climbed down from the plane and took his place in the jeep that was already waiting for them. None of the men spoke at all on the drive back through the heavy, mesmerizing quiet, blanketing mountains, seas, and forests. The feeling of desolation persisted when they turned off the road at the squadron. Yossarian got out of the car last. After a minute, Yossarian and a gentle, warm wind were the only things stirring in the haunting tranquility that hung like a drug over the vacated tents. The squadron stood insensate, bereft of everything human, but Dr. Nika, who roosted dolorously like a shivering turkey buzzard beside the closed door of the medical tent, his stuffed nose jabbing away in thirsting futility at the hazy sunlight streaming down around him. Yossarian knew Dr. Nika would not go swimming with him. Dr. Nika would never go swimming again. A person could swoon or suffer a mild coronary occlusion in an inch or two of water and drown to death, be carried out to sea by an undertow, or made vulnerable to poliomyelitis or meningococcus infection through chilling or overexertion. The threat of Bologna to others had instilled in Dr. Nika an even more poignant solicitude for his own safety. At night now, he heard burglars. Through the lavender gloom clouding the entrance of the operations tent, Yossarian glimpsed Chief White Half-Oat diligently embezzling whiskey rations, forging the signatures of non-drinkers, and pouring off the alcohol with which he was poisoning himself into separate bottles rapidly in order to steal as much as he could before Captain Black roused himself with recollection and came hurrying over indolently to steal the rest himself. The jeep started up again softly. Kid Samson, Nately, and the others wandered apart in a noiseless eddy of motion and were sucked away into the cloying yellow stillness. The jeep vanished with a cough. Yossarian was alone in a ponderous primeval lull in which everything green looked black and everything else was imbued with the color of pus. The breeze rustled leaves in a dry and diaphanous distance. He was restless, scared, and sleepy. The sockets of his eyes felt grimy with exhaustion. Wearily, he moved inside the parachute tent with its long table of smooth wood, a nagging bitch of a doubt burrowing painlessly inside a conscience that felt perfectly clear. He left his flak suit and parachute there, and crossed back past the water wagon to the intelligence tent to return his map case to Captain Black, who sat drowsing in his chair with his skinny long legs up on his desk and inquired with indifferent curiosity why Yossarian's plane had turned back. Yossarian ignored him. He set the map down on the counter and walked out. Back in his own tent, he squirmed out of his parachute harness and then out of his clothes. Orr was in Rome, due back that same afternoon from the rest leave he had won by ditching his plane in the waters off Genoa. Nately would already be packing to replace him, entranced to find himself still alive, and undoubtedly impatient to resume his wasted and heartbreaking courtship of his prostitute in Rome. When Yossarian was undressed, he sat down on his cot to rest. He felt much better as soon as he was naked. He never felt comfortable in clothes. In a little while, he put fresh undershorts back on and set out for the beach in his moccasins, a khaki-colored bath towel draped over his shoulders. The path from the squadron led him around a mysterious gun emplacement in the woods. Two of the three enlisted men stationed there lay sleeping on the circle of sandbags, and the third sat eating a purple pomegranate, biting off large mouthfuls between his churning jaws and spewing the ground roughage out away from him into the bushes. When he bit, red juice ran out of his mouth. Yossarian padded ahead into the forest again, caressing his bare, tingling belly adoringly from time to time, as though to reassure himself it was all still there. He rolled a piece of lint out of his navel. Along the ground, suddenly, on both sides of the path, he saw dozens of new mushrooms the rain had spawned, poking their nodular fingers up through the clammy earth like lifeless stalks of flesh, sprouting in such necrotic profusion everywhere he looked that they seemed to be proliferating right before his eyes. There were thousands of them, swarming as far back into the underbrush as he could see, and they appeared to swell in size and multiply in number as he spied them. He hurried away from them with a shiver of eerie alarm, and did not slacken his pace until the soil crumbled to dry sand beneath his feet, and they had been left behind. He glanced back apprehensively, half expecting to find the limp white things crawling after him in sightless pursuit, or snaking up through the treetops in a writhing and ungovernable mutative mass. The beach was deserted. The only sounds were hushed ones, the bloated gurgle of the stream, the respirating hum of the tall grass and shrubs behind him, the apathetic moaning of the dumb, translucent waves. The surf was always small, the water clear and cool. Yossarian left his things on the sand and moved through the knee-high waves until he was completely immersed. On the other side of the sea, a bumpy sliver of dark land lay wrapped in mist, almost invisible. He swam languorously out to the raft, held on a moment, and swam languorously back to where he could stand on the sandbar. He submerged himself head first into the green water several times until he felt clean and wide awake, and then stretched himself out face down in the sand and slept until the planes returning from Bologna were almost overhead and the great cumulative rumble of their many engines came crashing in through his slumber in an earth-shattering roar. He woke up blinking with a slight pain in his head, and opened his eyes upon a world boiling in chaos, in which everything was in proper order. He gasped in utter amazement at the fantastic sight of the 12 flights of planes organized calmly into exact formation. The scene was too unexpected to be true. There were no planes spurting ahead with wounded, none lagging behind with damage. No distress flares smoked in the sky. No ship was missing but his own. For an instant he was paralyzed with a sensation of madness. Then he understood, and almost wept at the irony. The explanation was simple. Clouds had covered the target before the planes could bomb it, and the mission to Bologna was still to be flown. He was wrong. There had been no clouds. Bologna had been bombed. Bologna was a milk run. There had been no flak there at all.